find you in New York almost immediately." Outside, a light rain began to fall. The coat turned on our windshield wipers. I didn't understand what Zia had told me. Perhaps Iskandar had sensed a change in Desjardins, and he was trying to protect his favorite student. But something else about the story bothered me, something I couldn't quite put my finger on. Zia stared into the rain as if she saw bad things out there in the night. "We're running out of time," she said. "He's coming back."
"Who's coming back?"
She looked at me urgently.
"The thing I needed to tell you. The thing you need. It's Set's secret name."
The storm surged. Thunder crackled and the truck shuddered in the wind.
"Hold on," I stammered. "How could you know Set's name? How did you even know we needed it?"
"You stole Desjardins' book. Desjardins told us about it. He said it didn't matter. He said you could not use the spell without Set's secret name, which is impossible to get."
"So how do you know it? Toth said it could only come from Set himself, or from the person..." My voice trailed off as a horrible thought occurred to me. "Or from the person closest to him."
Zia shut her eyes as if in pain.
I can't explain it, Carter. I just have this voice telling me the name."
"The fifth goddess," I said. "Nephthys."
"You were there, too, at the British Museum."
Zia looked completely stunned.
"No, that's impossible.
Iskandar said you were in danger. He wanted to take you somewhere safe. That's what he meant.
You're a godling."
She shook her head stubbornly.
"But he didn't take me away. I'm right here. If I were hosting a god, the other magicians of the house would have figured it out days ago. They know me too well. They would have noticed the changes in my magic. Desjardins would have destroyed me."
She had a point. But then another terrible thought occurred to me. "Unless Set is controlling him," I said.
"Carter, are you really so blind? Desjardins is not Set."
"Because you think it's Amos," I said. "Amos, who risked his life to save us, who told us to keep going without him. Besides, Set doesn't need a human form. He's using the pyramid."
"Which you know because..."
I hesitated. "Amos told us."
"This is getting us nowhere," Zia said. "I know Set's secret name, and I can tell you. But you must promise you will not tell Amos."
"Oh, come on. Besides, if you know the name, why can't you just use it yourself?" She shook her head, looking almost as frustrated as I felt.
"I don't know why. I just know it's not my role to play. It must be you or Sadie, blood of the pharaohs. If you don't..."
The truck slowed abruptly. Out the front windshield, about 20 yards ahead, a man in a blue coat was standing in our headlights. It was Amos. His clothes were tattered like he'd been sprayed with a shotgun, but otherwise he looked okay. Before the truck had even stopped completely, I jumped out of the cab and ran to meet him.
"Amos!" I cried. "What happened?"
"I distracted Sekhmet," he said, putting a finger through one of the holes in his coat. "For about 11 seconds. I'm glad to see you survived."
"There was a salsa factory," I started to explain, but Amos held up his hand.
"Time for explanations later," he said. "Right now we have to get going."
He pointed northwest, and I saw what he meant. The storm was worse up ahead. A lot worse. A wall of black blotted out the night sky, the mountains, the highway, as if it would swallow the whole world.
"Set's storm is gathering," Amos said with a twinkle in his eyes. "Shall we drive into it?"
35. Men ask for directions and other signs of the apocalypse. I don't know how I managed it with Carter and Zia yammering, but I got some sleep in the back of the truck. Even after the excitement of seeing Amos alive, as soon as we got going again, I was back in the bunk and drifting off. I suppose a good hardy spell can really take it out of you. Naturally, my bar took this as an opportunity to travel. Heaven forbid I get some peaceful rest. I found myself back in London, on the banks of the Thames. Cleopatra's Needle rose up in front of me. It was a grey day, cool and calm, and even the smell of the low-tide muck made me feel homesick. Isis stood next to me in a cloud-white dress, her dark hair braided with diamonds. Her multicoloured wings faded in and out behind her like the northern lights. "Your parents had the right idea," she said. "Bast was failing." "She was my friend," I said. "Yes, a good and loyal servant. But chaos cannot be kept down forever. It grows. It seeps into the cracks of civilization, breaks down the edges. It cannot be kept in balance. That is simply its nature." The obelisk rumbled, glowing faintly. "Today it is the American continent," Isis mused. "But unless the gods are rallied, unless we achieve our full strength, chaos will soon destroy the entire human world."
"We're doing our best," I insisted. "We'll beat Set."
Isis looked at me sadly.
"You know that's not what I mean. Set is only the beginning."
The image changed, and I saw London in ruins. I'd seen some horrific photos of the Blitz in World War II, but that was nothing compared to this. The city was levelled, rubble and dust for miles, the Thames choked with flotsam. The only thing standing was the obelisk, and as I watched, it began to crack open, all four sides peeling away like some ghastly flower unfolding. "Don't show me this," I pleaded.
"It will happen soon enough," Isis said, "as your mother foresaw. But if you cannot face it..."
The scene changed again. We stood in the throne room of a palace, the same one I'd seen before, where Set had entombed Osiris. The gods were gathering, materializing as streams of light that shot through the throne room curled round the pillars and took on human form. One became Toth with his stained lab coat, his wire-rimmed glasses, and his hair standing out all over his head. Another became Horus, the proud young warrior with silver and gold eyes. Sobek, the crocodile god, gripped his watery staff and snarled at me. A mass of scorpions scuttled behind a column and emerged on the other side as Circuit, the brown-robed arachnid goddess. Then my heart leaped because I noticed a boy in black standing in the shadows behind the throne, Anubis, his dark eyes studying me with regret. He pointed at the throne, and I saw it was empty. The palace was missing its heart. The room was cold and dark, and it was impossible to believe this had once been a place of celebrations. Isis turned to me.
"We need a ruler. Horus must become Pharaoh. He must unite the gods and the House of Life. It is the only way."
"You can't mean Carter," I said. "My mess of a brother? Pharaoh? Are you joking?"
"We have to help him. You and I."
The idea was so ridiculous I would have laughed had the gods not been staring at me so gravely. "Help him?" I said. "Why doesn't he help me become Pharaoh?"
"There have been strong women pharaohs," Isis admitted. "Hatshepsut ruled well for many years. Nefertiti's power was equal to her husband's. But you have a different path, Sadie. Your power will not come from sitting on a throne. I think you know this."
I looked at the throne, and I realized Isis had a point. The idea of sitting there with a crown on my head, trying to rule this lot of bad-tempered gods, did not appeal to me in the slightest. Still, Carter?
"You've grown strong, Sadie," Isis said. "I don't think you realize how strong. Soon we will face the test together. We will prevail, if you maintain your courage and faith."
"Courage and faith," I said. "Not my two strong suits."
"Your moment comes," Isis said. "We depend on you."
The gods gathered round, staring at me expectantly. They began to crowd in, pressing so close I couldn't breathe, grabbing my arms, shaking me. I awoke to find Zia poking my shoulder.
Sadie, we've stopped.
I instinctively reached for my wand. What?
Where?
Zia pushed aside the curtains of the sleeping berth and leaned over me from the front seat, unnervingly like a vulture.
Amos and Carter are in the gas station. You need to be prepared to move.
Why? I sat up and looked at the windshield, straight into a raging sandstorm. Oh. The sky was black, so it was impossible to tell if it was day or night. Through the gale of wind and sand, I could see we were parked in front of a lighted petrol station.
We're in Phoenix, Zia said, but most of the city is shut down. People are evacuating.
Time?
4:30 in the morning,
Zia said.
Magic isn't working very well. The closer we get to the mountain, the worse it is, and the truck's GPS system is down. Amos and Carter went inside to ask directions.
That didn't sound promising. If two male magicians were desperate enough to stop for directions, we were in dire straits. The truck's cab shook in the howling wind. After all we'd been through, I felt silly being scared of a storm, but I climbed over the seat so I could sit next to Zia and have some company.
How long have they been in there? I asked.
Not long,
Zia said.
I wanted to talk to you before they come back.
I raised an eyebrow. About Carter? Well, if you're wondering whether he likes you, the way he stammers might be an indication.
Zia frowned.
No, I'm asking if I mind. Very considerate.
I must say at first I had my doubts, what with you threatening to kill us and all, but I've decided you're not a bad sort, and Carter's mad about you, so...
It's not about Carter.
I wrinkled my nose. Oops. Could you just forget what I said then?
It's about Set.
God, I sighed. Not this again. Still suspicious of Amos.
You're blind not to see it, Zia said. Set loves deception and traps. It is his favorite way to kill.
Part of me knew she had a point. No doubt you'll think I was foolish not to listen. But have you ever sat by while someone talks badly about a member of your family? Even if it's not your favorite relative, the natural reaction is to defend them. At least it was for me, possibly because I didn't have that much family to begin with. Look, Zia, I can't believe Amos would...
Amos wouldn't,
Zia agreed.
But Set can bend the mind and control the body. I'm not a specialist on possession, but it was a very common problem in ancient times. Minor demons are difficult enough to dislodge. A major god...
He's not possessed. He can't be. I winced. A sharp pain was burning in my palm, in the spot where I'd last held the feather of truth. But I wasn't telling a lie. I did believe Amos was innocent, didn't I? Zia studied my expression.
You need Amos to be all right. He is your uncle. You've lost too many members of your family. I understand that.
I wanted to snap back that she didn't understand anything, but her tone made me suspect she had known grief, possibly even more than I. We've got no choice, I said. There's, what, 3 hours till sunrise? Amos knows the best way into the mountain. Trap or no, we have to go there and try to stop Set. I could almost see the gears spinning in her head as she searched for some way, any way, to convince me.
All right, she said at last. I wanted to tell Carter something, but I never got the opportunity. I'll tell you instead. The last thing you need to stop Set...
You couldn't possibly know his secret name. Zia held my gaze. Maybe it was the feather of truth, but I was certain she wasn't bluffing. She did have the name of Set, or at least she believed she did. And, honestly, I'd overheard bits of her conversation with Carter while I was in the back of the cab. I hadn't meant to eavesdrop, but it was hard not to.
I looked at Zia and tried to believe she was hosting Nephthys, but it didn't make any sense. I'd spoken with Nephthys. She told me she was far away in some sort of sleeping host, and Zia was right here in front of me.
"It will work," Zia insisted, "but I can't do it. It must be you."
"Why not use it yourself?" I demanded. "Because you spent all your magic?" She waved away the question.
"Just promise me you will use it now, on Amos, before we reach the mountain. It may be your only chance.
And if you're wrong, we waste the only chance we have. The book disappears once it's used, right?" Grudgingly, Zia nodded.
"Once read, the book will dissolve and appear somewhere else in the world. But if you wait any longer, we're doomed. If Set lures you into his base of power, you'll never have the strength to confront him. Sadie, please
tell me the name," I said. "I promise I'll use it at the right time."
"Now is the right time."
I hesitated, hoping Isis would drop some words of wisdom, but the goddess was silent. I don't know if I would have relented. Perhaps things would have turned out differently if I'd agreed to Zia's plan. But before I could make that choice, the truck's doors opened, and Amos and Carter climbed in with a gust of sand.
"We're close."
Amos smiled as if this were good news.
"Very, very close."
36. Our family is vaporized. Less than a mile from Camelback Mountain, we broke through into a circle of perfect calm.
"Eye of the storm," Carter guessed.
It was eerie. All around the mountain swirled a cylinder of black clouds. Traces of smoke drifted back and forth from Camelback's peak to the edges of the maelstrom like the spokes of a wheel. But directly above us, the sky was clear and starry, beginning to turn grey. Sunrise wasn't far off. The streets were empty. Mansions and hotels clustered round the mountain's base, completely dark, but the mountain itself glowed. Ever hold your hand over a torch, sorry, a flashlight for you Americans, and watch the way your skin glows red? That's the way the mountain looked. Something very bright and hot was trying to burn through the rock.
"Nothing's moving on the streets," Zia said. "If we tried to drive up to the mountain,
we'll be seen," I said.
"What about that spell?"
Carter looked at Zia.
"You know, the one you used in the first gnome."
"What spell?" I asked. Zia shook her head.
"Carter is referring to an invisibility spell. But I have no magic, and unless you have the proper components, it can't be done on a whim."
"Amos?" I asked. He pondered the question.
"No invisibility, I'm afraid. But I have another idea."
I thought turning into a bird was bad, until Amos turned us into storm clouds. He explained what he was going to do in advance, but it didn't make me any less nervous.
"No one will notice a few wisps of black cloud in the midst of a storm," he reasoned.
"But this is impossible," Zia said. "This is storm magic, chaos magic. We should not..."
Amos raised his wand and Zia disintegrated.
"No!"
Carter yelled. But then he too was gone, replaced by a swirl of black dust. Amos turned to me.
"Oh no,"
I said. "Thanks, but..."
Poof!
I was a storm cloud. Now, that may sound amazing to you, but imagine your hands and feet disappearing, turning into wisps of wind. Imagine your body replaced by dust and vapor, and having a tingly feeling in your stomach without even having a stomach. Imagine having to concentrate just to keep yourself from dispersing to nothing. I got so angry a flash of lightning crackled inside me.
"Don't be that way," Amos chided. "It's only for a few minutes. Follow me."
He melted into a heavier, darker bit of storm and raced towards the mountain. Following wasn't easy. At first I could only float. Every wind threatened to take some part of me away. I tried swirling and found it helped keep my particles together. Then I imagined myself filling with helium, and suddenly I was off. I couldn't be sure if Carter and Zia were following or not. When you're a storm, your vision isn't human. I could vaguely sense what was around me, but what I saw was scattered and fuzzy, as if through heavy static. I headed towards the mountain, which was an almost irresistible beacon to my storm self. It glowed with heat, pressure, and turbulence, everything a little dust devil like me could want. I followed Amos to a ridge on the side of the mountain, but I returned to human form a little too soon. I tumbled out of the sky and knocked Carter to the ground. "Ouch!" he groaned. "Sorry," I offered, though mostly I was concentrating on not getting sick. My stomach still felt like it was mostly storm. Zia and Amos stood next to us, peeping into a crevice between two large sandstone boulders. Red light seeped from within and made their faces look devilish. Zia turned to us. Judging from her expression, what she'd seen wasn't good.
"Only the Pyramidion left."
"The what?" I looked through the crevice, and the view was almost as disorienting as being a storm cloud. The entire mountain was hollowed out, just as Carter had described. The cavern floor was about 600 meters below us. Fires blazed everywhere, bathing the rock walls in blood-coloured light. A giant crimson pyramid dominated the cave, and at its base masses of demons milled about like a rock concert crowd waiting for the show to begin. High above them, eye level to us, two magic barges manned by crews of demons floated slowly, ceremoniously, towards the pyramid. Suspended in a mesh of ropes between the boats was the only piece of the pyramid not yet installed, a golden capstone to top off the structure.
"They know they've won," Carter guessed. "They're making a show of it."
"Yes,"
Amos said. "Well, let's blow up the boats or something," I said. Amos looked at me.
"Is that your strategy? Honestly?"
His tone made me feel completely stupid. Looking down on the demon army, the enormous pyramid, what had I been thinking? I couldn't battle this. I was a bloody 12-year-old. "We have to try," Carter said. "Dad's in there." That shook me out of my self-pity. If we were going to die, at least we would do it trying to rescue my father. Oh, and North America too, I suppose. "Right," I said. "We fly to those boats. We stop them from placing the capstone..."
"Pyramidion,"
Zia corrected. "Whatever. Then we fly into the pyramid and find Dad."
"And when Set tries to stop you?"
Amos asked. I glanced at Zia, who was silently warning me not to say more. "First things first," I said. "How do we fly to the boats?"
"As a storm,"
Amos suggested. "No," the rest of us said.
"I will not be part of more chaos magic," Zia insisted. "It is not natural."
Amos waved at the spectacle below us.
"Tell me this is natural. You have another plan?"
"Birds," I said, hating myself for even considering it. "I'll become a kite. Carter can do a falcon." "Sadie," Carter warned. "What if I have to try?" I looked away before I could lose my resolve. "Zia, it's been almost 10 hours since your pillar of fire, hasn't it? Still no magic?" Zia held out her hand and concentrated. At first, nothing happened. Then red light flickered along her fingers, and her staff appeared in her grip, still smoking.
"Good timing," Carter said. "Also bad timing," Amos observed. "It means Desjardins is no longer pursued by the Pillar of Fire. He'll be here soon, and I'm sure he'll bring backup. More enemies for us."
"My magic will still be weak," Zia warned. "I won't be much help in a fight, but I can perhaps manage to summon a ride."
She brought out the vulture pendant she'd used at Luxor.
"Which leaves me,"
Amos said.
"No worries there. Let's meet on the left boat. We'll take that one out, then deal with the right. And let's hope for surprise."
I wasn't in the mood to let Amos set our plans, but I couldn't find any fault with his logic. "Right. We'll have to finish the boats off quickly, then head into the pyramid itself. Perhaps we can seal off the entrance or something." Carter nodded. "Ready." At first, the plan seemed to go well. Turning into a kite was no problem, and to my surprise, once I reached the prow of the ship, I managed to turn back into a human on the first try with my staff and wand ready.
The only person more surprised was the demon right in front of me, whose switchblade head popped straight up in alarm. Before he could slice me or even cry out, I summoned wind from my staff and blew him off the side of the boat. Two of his brethren charged forward, but Carter appeared behind them, sword drawn, and sliced them into piles of sand. Unfortunately, Zia was a bit less stealthy. A giant vulture with a girl hanging from its feet tends to attract attention. As she flew towards the boat, demons below pointed and yelled. Some threw spears that fell short of their mark. Zia's grand entrance did manage to distract the remaining two demons on our boat, however, which allowed Amos to appear behind them. He'd taken the form of a fruit bat, which brought back bad memories, but he quickly returned to human form and body-slammed the demons, sending them tumbling into the air. "Hold on!" he told us. Zia landed just in time to grab the tiller. Carter and I grabbed the sides of the boat. I had no idea what Amos was planning, but after my last flying boat ride, I wasn't taking chances. Amos began to chant, pointing his staff towards the other boats, where the demons were just beginning to shout and point at us. One of them was tall and very thin, with black eyes and a disgusting face, like muscle with the skin peeled away. "That's Set's lieutenant," Carter warned. "Face of horror." "You!" the demon screamed. "Get them!" Amos finished his spell. "Smoke!" he intoned. Instantly, the second boat evaporated into grey mist. The demons fell screaming. The golden capstone plummeted until the lines attached to it from our side yanked taut, and our boat nearly flipped over. Canted sideways, we began to sink towards the cavern floor. "Carter, cut the lines!" I screamed. He sliced them with his sword, and the boat leveled out, rising several meters in an instant and leaving my stomach behind. The Pyramidian crashed to the cavern floor with much crunching and squishing. I had the feeling we'd just made a nice stack of demon griddle cakes. "So far, so good," Carter noted, but as usual, he'd spoken too soon. Zia pointed below us. "Look! All those demons who had wings, a small percentage but still a good 40 or 50, had launched themselves towards us, filling the air like a swarm of angry wasps." "Fly to the pyramid," Amos said. "I'll distract the demons." The pyramid's entrance, a simple doorway between two columns at the base of the structure, was not far from us. It was guarded by a few demons, but most of Set's forces were running towards our boat, screaming and throwing rocks, which tended to fall back down and hit them, but no one says demons are bright. "They're too many," I argued. "Amos, they'll kill you."
"Don't worry about me," he said grimly. "Seal the entrance behind you."
He pushed me over the side, giving me no choice but to turn into a kite. Carter in falcon form was already spiraling towards the entrance, and I could hear Zia's vulture flapping its great wings behind us. I heard Amos yell, "For Brooklyn!" It was an odd battle cry. I glanced back, and the boat burst into flames. It began drifting away from the pyramid and down towards the army of monsters. Fireballs shot from the boat in all directions as pieces of the hall crumbled away. I didn't have time to marvel at Amos's magic or worry what had happened to him. He distracted many of the demons with his pyrotechnics, but some noticed us. Carter and I landed just inside the pyramid's entrance and returned to human form. Zia tumbled in next to us and turned her vulture back into an amulet. The demons were only a few steps behind, a dozen massive blokes with the heads of insects, dragons, and assorted Swiss Army knife attachments. Carter thrust out his hand. A giant shimmering fist appeared and mimicked his move, pushing right between Zia and me and slamming the doors shut. Carter closed his eyes in concentration, and a burning golden symbol etched itself across the doors like a seal. The Eye of Horus. The lines glowed faintly as demons hammered against the barrier, trying to get in.
"It won't hold them long," Carter said.
I was duly impressed, though of course I didn't say that. Looking at the sealed doors, all I could think about was Amos out there on a burning boat, surrounded by an evil army.
"Amos knew what he was doing," Carter said, though he didn't sound very convinced.
"He's probably fine."
"Come on," Zia prodded us. "No time for second-guessing."
The tunnel was narrow, red and humid, so I felt like I was crawling through an artery of some enormous beast.
We made our way down single file, as the tunnel sloped at about 40 degrees, which would have made a lovely water slide, but wasn't so good for stepping carefully. The walls were decorated with intricate carvings, like most Egyptian walls we'd seen, but Carter obviously didn't like them. He kept stopping, scowling at the pictures. "What?" I demanded, after the fifth or sixth time. "These aren't normal tomb drawings," he said. "No afterlife pictures, no pictures of the gods." Zia nodded.
"This pyramid is not a tomb. It is a platform, a body to contain the power of Set. All these pictures are to increase chaos and make it reign forever."
As we kept walking, I paid more attention to the carvings, and I saw what Zia meant. The pictures showed horrible monsters, scenes of war, cities such as Paris and London in flames, full-color portraits of Set and the Set animal tearing into modern armies, scenes so gruesome no Egyptian would ever commit them to stone. The farther we went, the weirder and more vivid the pictures became, and the queasier I felt. Finally, we reached the heart of the pyramid. Where the burial chamber should have been in a regular pyramid, Set had designed a throne room for himself. It was about the size of a tennis court, but around the edges the floor dropped off into a deep trench like a moat. Far, far below, red liquid bubbled. Blood? Lava? Evil ketchup? None of the possibilities were good. The trench looked easy enough to jump, but I wasn't anxious to do so because inside the room the entire floor was carved with red hieroglyphs, all spells invoking the power of Isfet, chaos. Far above, in the centre of the ceiling, a single square hole let in blood-red light. Otherwise, there seemed to be no exits. Along either wall crouched four obsidian statues of the Set animal, their faces turned toward us with pearl teeth bared and emerald eyes glittering. But the worst part was the throne itself. It was a horrid, misshapen thing, like a red stalagmite that had grown haphazardly from centuries of dripping sediment. And it had formed itself around a gold coffin, Dad's coffin, which was buried in the throne's base, with just enough of it sticking out to form a kind of footrest. "How do we get him out?" I said, my voice trembling. Next to me, Carter caught his breath. "Amos?" I followed his gaze up to the glowing red vent in the middle of the ceiling. A pair of legs dangled from the opening. Then Amos dropped down, opening his cloak like a parachute so that he floated to the floor. His clothes were still smoking, his hair dusted with ash. He pointed his staff towards the ceiling and spoke a command. The shaft he'd come through rumbled, spilling dust and rubble, and the light was abruptly cut off. Amos dusted off his clothes and smiled at us.
"That should hold them for a while."
"How did you do that?" I asked. He gestured for us to join him in the room. Carter jumped the trench without hesitation. I didn't like it, but I wasn't going to let him go without me, so I hopped the trench too. Immediately, I felt even queasier than before, as if the room were tilting, throwing my senses off balance. Zia came over last, eyeing Amos carefully.
"You should not be alive," she said.
Amos chuckled.
"Oh, I've heard that before. Now let's get to business."
"Yes," I stared at the throne. "How do we get the coffin out?"
"Cut it?"
Carter drew his sword, but Amos held up his hand.
"No, children. That's not the business I mean. I've made sure no one will interrupt us. Now it's time we talked."
A cold tingle started up my spine. "Talked?" Suddenly, Amos fell to his knees and began to convulse. I ran towards him, but he looked up at me, his face racked with pain. His eyes were molten red. "Run!" he groaned. He collapsed, and red steam issued from his body.
"We have to go," Zia grabbed my arm.
"No!" But I watched, frozen in horror, as the steam rose from Amos's unconscious form and drifted towards the throne, slowly taking the shape of a seated man.
a red warrior in fiery armor, with an iron staff in his hand and the head of a canine monster.
Oh, dear, Set laughed. I suppose Zia gets to say, I told you so.
37. Leroy gets his revenge. Maybe I'm a slow learner, okay? Because it wasn't until that moment, facing the god Set in the middle of his throne room, in the heart of an evil pyramid, with an army of demons outside and the world about to explode, that I thought, coming here was a really bad idea. Set rose from his throne. He was red-skinned and muscular, with fiery armor and a black iron staff. His head shifted from bestial to human. One moment he had the hungry stare and slavering jaws of my old friend Leroy, the monster from the D.C. airport. The next, he had sandy hair and a handsome but harsh face, with intelligent eyes that sparkled with humor and a cruel, crooked smile. He kicked our uncle out of the way, and Amos groaned, which at least meant he was alive. I was clenching my sword so tight the blade trembled. "Zia was right," I said. "You possessed Amos." Set spread his hands, trying to look modest.
"Well, you know, it wasn't a full possession. Gods can exist in many places at once, Carter. Horus could tell you that if he was being honest. I'm sure Horus has been looking for a nice war monument to occupy, or a military academy somewhere. Anything but that scrawny little form of yours. Most of my being has now transferred to this magnificent structure."
He swept his arm proudly around the throne room.
"But a sliver of my soul was quite enough to control Amos Cain."
He held out his pinky, and a wisp of red smoke snaked toward Amos, sinking into his clothes. Amos arched his back like he'd been hit by lightning. "Stop it!" I yelled. I ran toward Amos, but the red mist had already dissipated. Our uncle's body went slack. Set dropped his hand as if bored with the attack.
"Not much left, I'm afraid. Amos fought well. He was very entertaining, demanding much more of my energy than I had anticipated. That chaos magic, that was his idea. He tried his best to warn you, to make it obvious I was controlling him. The funny thing is, I forced him to use his own magic reserves to pull off those spells. He almost burned out his soul trying to send you those warning flares. Turn you into a storm, please. Who does that anymore?"
"You're a beast,"
Sadie shouted. Set gasped in mock surprise.
"Really? Me?"
Then he roared with laughter as Sadie tried to drag Amos out of harm's way. "Amos was in London that night," I said, hoping to keep his attention on me. "He must have followed us to the British Museum, and you've been controlling him ever since. Desjardins was never your host."
"Oh, that commoner. Please,"
Set sneered.
"We always prefer blood of the pharaohs, as I'm sure you've heard. But I did love fooling you. I thought the bonsoir was an especially nice touch."
"You knew my Ba was there, watching. You forced Amos to sabotage his own house so your monsters could get in. You made him walk into an ambush. Why didn't you just have him kidnap us?"
Set spread his hands.
"As I said, Amos put up a good fight. There were certain things I could not make him do without destroying him completely, and I didn't want to ruin my new plaything quite so soon."
Anger burned inside me. Amos's odd behavior finally made sense.
Yes, he had been controlled by Set, but he'd been fighting it all the way. The conflict I'd felt in him had been his attempts to warn us. He'd almost destroyed himself trying to save us, and Set had thrown him aside like a broken toy.
"Give me control," Horace urged. "We will avenge him."
"I've got this," I said.
"No,"
Horace said. "You must let me. You are not ready." Set laughed as if he could sense our struggle.
"Oh, poor Horace. Your host needs training wheels. You seriously expect to challenge me with that?"
For the first time, Horace and I had the same feeling at exactly the same moment. Rage. Without thinking, we raised our hand, extending our energy towards Set. A glowing fist slammed into him, and the red god flew backward with such force he cracked a column, which tumbled down on top of him. For a heartbeat, the only sound was the trickle of dust and debris. Then, out of the rubble came a deep howl of laughter. Set rose from the ruins, tossing aside a huge chunk of stone.
"Nice," he roared. "Completely ineffective, but nice. It will be a pleasure chopping you to bits, Horace, as I did your father before you. I will entomb you all in this chamber to increase my storm. All four of my precious siblings, and the storm will be large enough to envelop the world."
I blinked, momentarily losing my focus. "Four?"
"Oh, yes."
Set's eyes drifted to Zia, who had quietly retreated to one side of the room.
"I haven't forgotten you, my dear."
Zia glanced at me in desperation. "Carter, don't worry about me. He's trying to distract you."
"Lovely goddess,"
Set purred.
"The form does not do you justice, but your choices were limited, weren't they?"
Set moved toward her, his staff beginning to glow.
"No!"
I shouted. I advanced, but Set was just as good at magical shoving as I was. He pointed at me, and I slammed against the wall, pinned as if an entire football team were holding me down.
"Carter!" Sadie cried. "She's Nephthys. She can take care of herself."
"No!"
All my instincts told me Zia couldn't be Nephthys. At first I'd thought so, but the more I considered, the more it seemed wrong. I felt no divine magic from her, and something told me I would have if she were really hosting a goddess. Set would crush her unless I helped. But if Set was trying to distract me, it was working. As he stalked toward Zia, I struggled against his magic, but I couldn't free myself. The more I tried to combine my power with Horace's, the way I'd done before, the more my fear and panic got in the way.
"You must yield to me," Horace insisted, and the two of us wrestled for control of my mind, which gave me a splitting headache.
Set took another step toward Zia.
"Ah, Nephthys," he crooned. "At the beginning of time, you were my treacherous sister. In another incarnation, in another age, you were my treacherous wife. Now I think you'll make a nice appetizer. True, you're the weakest of us all, but you're still one of the five, and there is power in collecting the complete set."
He paused, then grinned.
"The complete set. That's funny. Now, let's consume your energy and entomb your soul, shall we?"
Zia thrust out her wand. A red sphere of defensive energy glowed around her, but even I could tell it was weak. Set shot a blast of sand from his staff, and the sphere collapsed. Zia stumbled backward, the sand ripping at her hair and clothes. I struggled to move, but Zia yelled, "Carter, I'm not important. Stay focused. Don't resist." She raised her staff and shouted, "The House of Life!" She launched a bolt of fire at Set, an attack that must have cost all of her remaining energy. Set batted the flames aside, straight at Sadie, who had to raise her wand quickly to protect herself and Amos from getting fried. Set tugged at the air as if pulling an invisible rope, and Zia flew toward him like a rag doll, straight into his hand. "Don't resist." How could Zia say that? I resisted like crazy, but it didn't do me any good. All I could do was stare helplessly as Set lowered his face to Zia's and examined her. At first, Set seemed triumphant, gleeful, but his expression quickly turned to confusion. He scowled, his eyes flaring.
"What trick is this?" he growled. "Where have you hidden her?"
"You will not possess her," Zia managed, her breath choked off by his grip.
"Where is she?"
He threw Zia aside. She slammed against the wall and would have slid into the moat, but Sadie yelled, "Wind!" and a gust of air lifted Zia's body just enough for her to tumble onto the floor. Sadie ran over and dragged her away from the glowing trench. Set roared,
"Is this your trickery, Isis?"
He sent another blast of sandstorm against them, but Sadie held up her wand. The storm met a shield of force that deflected the wind around it. The sand pitted the walls behind Sadie, making a halo-shaped scar in the rock. I didn't understand what Set was so angry about, but I couldn't allow him to hurt Sadie. Seeing her alone, protecting Zia from the wrath of a god, something inside me clicked, like an engine shifting into high gear. My thinking suddenly became faster and clearer. The anger and fear didn't go away, but I realized they weren't important. They weren't going to help me save my sister. "Don't resist," Zia had told me. She didn't mean resisting Set. She meant Horus. The Falcon God and I had been wrestling with each other for days as he tried to take control of my body. But neither of us could be in control. That was the answer. We had to act in unison, trust each other completely, or we were both dead.
"Yes," Horus thought, and he stopped pushing.
I stopped resisting, letting our thoughts flow together. I understood his power, his memories, and his fears. I saw every host he had ever been over 1,000 lifetimes, and he saw my mind, everything, even the stuff I wasn't proud of. It's hard to describe the feeling, and I knew from Horus's memory that this kind of union was very rare, like the one time when the coin doesn't land heads or tails, but stands on its edge, perfectly balanced. He did not control me. I did not use him for power. We acted as one. Our voices spoke in harmony.
"Now."
And the magic bonds that held us shattered. My combat avatar formed around me, lifting me off the floor and encasing me with golden energy. I stepped forward and raised my sword. The falcon warrior mimicked the movement, perfectly attuned to my wishes. Set turned and regarded me with cold eyes.
"So, Horus," he said, "you managed to find the pedals of your little bike, eh? That does not mean you can ride."
"I am Carter Kane," I said. "Blood of the Pharaohs, Eye of Horus. And now, Set, brother, uncle, traitor, I'm going to crush you like a gnat." 38.
The House is in the House. It was a fight to the death, and I felt great. Every move was perfect. Every strike was so much fun I wanted to laugh out loud. Set grew in size until he was larger than me, and his iron staff the size of a boat's mast. His face would flicker, sometimes human, sometimes the feral maw of the Set animal. We clashed sword against staff and sparks flew. He pushed me off balance and I smashed into one of his animal statues, which toppled to the floor and broke. I regained my balance and charged, my blade biting into a chink of Set's shoulder guard. He howled as black blood seeped from the wound.
He swung his staff, and I rolled before the strike could split my head. His staff cracked the floor instead. We fought back and forth, smashing pillars and walls, with chunks of the ceiling falling around us, until I realized Sadie was yelling to get my attention. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw her trying to shield Zia and Amos from the destruction. She'd drawn a hasty protective circle on the floor, and her shields were deflecting the falling debris, but I understood why she was worried. Much more of this, and the entire throne room would collapse, crushing all of us. I doubted it would hurt Set much. He was probably counting on that. He wanted to entomb us here. I had to get him into the open. Maybe if I gave Sadie time, she could free Dad's coffin from that throne. Then I remembered how Bost had described her fight with Apophis, grappling with the enemy for eternity.
Yes, Horace agreed.
I raised my fist and channeled a burst of energy toward the air vent above us, blasting it open until red light once again poured through. Then I dropped my sword and launched myself at Set. I grabbed his shoulders with my bare hands, trying to get him in a wrestler's hold. He attempted to pummel me, but his staff was useless at close range. He growled and dropped the weapon, then grabbed my arms. He was much stronger than I was, but Horace knew some good moves. I twisted and got behind Set, my forearm slipping under his arm and grabbing his neck in a vice. We stumbled forward, almost stepping on Sadie's protective shields. Now we've got him, I thought. What do we do with him? Ironically, it was Amos who gave me the answer. I remembered how he'd turned me into a storm, overcoming my sense of self by sheer mental force. Our minds had had a brief battle, but he had imposed his will with absolute confidence, imagining me as a storm cloud, and that's what I'd become. You're a fruit bat, I told Set. No, his mind yelled, but I had surprised him. I could feel his confusion, and I used it against him. It was easy to imagine him as a bat, since I'd seen Amos become one when he was possessed by Set. I pictured my enemy shrinking, growing leathery wings and an even uglier face. I shrank too, until I was a falcon with a fruit bat in my claws. No time to waste. I shot toward the air vent, wrestling with the bat as we spun in circles up the shaft, slashing and biting. Finally, we burst into the open, reverting to our warrior forms on the side of the Red Pyramid. I stood uneasily on the slope. My avatar shimmered with damage along the right arm, and my own arm was cut and bleeding in the same spot. Set rose, wiping black blood from his mouth. He grinned at me, and his face flickered with the snarl of a predator.
You can die knowing you made a good effort, Horace, but it's much too late. Look.
I gazed out over the cavern, and my heart crawled into my throat. The army of demons had engaged a new enemy in battle. Magicians, dozens of them, had appeared in a loose circle around the pyramid and were fighting their way forward. The House of Life must have gathered all its available forces, but they were pathetically few against Set's legions. Each magician stood inside a moving protective circle, like a spotlight beam, wading through the enemy with staff and wand glowing. Flames, lightning, and tornadoes ripped through the demon host. I spotted all kinds of summoned beasts, lions, serpents, sphinxes, and even some hippos charging through the enemy like tanks. Here and there, hieroglyphs glowed in the air, causing explosions and earthquakes that destroyed Set's forces. But more demons just kept coming, surrounding the magicians in deeper and deeper ranks. I watched as one magician was completely overwhelmed, his circle broken in a flash of green light, and he went down under the enemy wave.
This is the end of the house,
Set said with satisfaction.
They cannot prevail as long as my pyramid stands.
The magicians seemed to know this. As they got closer, they sent fiery comets and bolts of lightning toward the pyramid, but each blast dissipated harmlessly against its stone slopes, consumed in the red haze of Set's power. Then I spotted the golden capstone. Four snake-headed giants had retrieved it and were carrying it slowly but steadily through the melee. Set's lieutenant, Face of Horror, shouted orders to them, lashing them with a whip to keep them moving. They pressed forward until they reached the pyramid's base and began to climb. I charged toward them, but Set intervened in an instant, placing himself in my path.
I don't think so, Horus, he laughed. You won't ruin this party.
We both summoned our weapons to our hands and fought with renewed ferocity, slicing and dodging. I brought my sword down in a deadly arc, but Set ducked aside and my blade hit stone, sending a shockwave through my whole body. Before I could recover, Set spoke a word.
Hawi! Strike!
The hieroglyphs, including two figures brandishing sticks, exploded in my face and sent me tumbling down the side of the pyramid. When my vision cleared, I saw a face of horror and the snake-headed giants far above me, lugging their golden load up the side of the monument, only a few steps from the top. No, I muttered. I tried to rise, but my avatar form was sluggish. Then, out of nowhere, a magician catapulted into the midst of the demons and unleashed a gale of wind. Demons went flying, dropping the capstone, and the magician struck it with his staff, stopping it from sliding. The magician was Desjardins. His forked beard and robes and leopard-skin cape were singed with fire, and his eyes were full of rage. He pressed his staff against the capstone, and its golden shape began to glow. But before Desjardins could destroy it, Set rose up behind him and swung his iron rod like a baseball bat. Desjardins tumbled, broken and unconscious, all the way down the pyramid, disappearing into the mob of demons. My heart twisted. I'd never liked Desjardins, but no one deserved a fate like that.
Annoying, Set said, but not effective. This is what the House of Life has reduced itself to, eh, Horus?
I charged up the slope, and again our weapons clanged together. We fought back and forth as gray light began to seep through the cracks in the mountain above us. Horus's keen senses told me we had about 2 minutes until sunrise, maybe less. Horus's energy kept surging through me. My avatar was only mildly damaged, my attacks still swift and strong. But it wasn't enough to defeat Set, and Set knew it. He was in no hurry. With every minute, another magician went down on the battlefield, and chaos got closer to winning.
Patience, Horus urged. We fought him for 7 years the first time.
But I knew we didn't have 7 minutes, much less 7 years. I wished Sadie were here, but I could only hope she'd manage to free Dad and keep Zia and Amos safe. That thought distracted me. Set swept his staff at my feet, and instead of jumping, I tried to back up. The blow cracked against my right ankle, knocking me off balance and sending me somersaulting down the pyramid's side. Set laughed.
Have a nice trip.
Then he picked up the capstone. I rose, groaning, but my feet were like lead. I staggered up the slope, but before I'd closed even half the distance, Set placed the capstone and completed the structure. Red light flowed down the sides of the pyramid with a sound like the world's largest bass guitar, shaking the entire mountain and making my whole body go numb.
30 seconds to sunrise,
Set yelled with glee.
And this land will be mine forever. You can't stop me alone, Horus. Especially not in the desert, the source of my strength.
You're right, said a nearby voice. I glanced over and saw Sadie rising from the air vent, radiant with multicolored light, her staff and wand glowing.
Except Horus is not alone, she said, and we're not going to fight you in the desert.
She struck her staff against the pyramid and shouted a name, the last words I'd ever expect her to utter as a battle cry.
Zia tells me a secret. Cheers, Carter, for making me look dramatic and all that. The truth was a bit less glamorous. Back up, shall we?
When my brother, the crazy chicken warrior, turned into a falcon and went up the pyramid's chimney with his new friend, the fruit bat, he left me playing nurse to two very wounded people, which I didn't appreciate and which I wasn't particularly good at. Poor Amos's wounds seemed more magical than physical. He didn't have a mark on him, but his eyes were rolled up in his head and he was barely breathing.